This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. Michigan Radio's Zoe Clark recently sat down with former Democratic candidate for governor, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, for an exclusive post-primary election interview to get his take on the long campaign and what's next.
This was 534 days ago.
I am here today to announce my candidacy for governor of the state of Michigan.
Abdul El-Sayed there officially announced he was running for governor.
I'm doing this because I believe that people matter more. I'm doing this because I believe that our collective potential is greater than our cynicism. I'm doing this because I believe in a future that is brighter than our past, a tomorrow that is greater than our today. I'm doing this because I believe that the challenges that are faced by poor and working black people in places like Detroit and poor and working white people in places like Ishpeming and Big Rapids, those are the same challenges, and we have to solve them.
And I'm sitting across from Abdul El-Sayed right now in the studios of Ann Arbor, and I'm watching your face as you listen to yourself now a week after not winning the Democratic primary. And I'm watching your face, and I'm having trouble reading you. It seems sort of bittersweet. Or what are you thinking about that day 534 days ago?
I wouldn't change a thing. You know, obviously, when you decide to run for something, you aim to win. But I'm proud of the fact that we built a movement and that our message didn't change at all. The reasons that I got into it are the same reasons that I stayed in it, and the same reasons that I hope to continue fighting for a more just, equitable, sustainable Michigan and America. And so I'm really just proud of our campaign. We punched well above our weight class, and I think have had an indelible impact on Michigan politics, on national politics. We earned 341,000 votes, which in any other primary year would have been more than enough to take it away running, and showed people a vision for politics that I hope is abiding, and I hope will inspire so many people who have been told that they don't belong and that they can't do this to think differently about what's possible for them. And if we've made our politics a little bit more inclusive, if we made our state a little bit more welcoming, if we've moved the conversation about access to universal health care through single payer mechanisms, standing up to corporations in politics, a living standard of water, 100% renewable energy, then I know that somebody will pick that up and move it forward. So,
and talking about inclusivity in politics, I want to talk a little bit about what it meant for you within sort of the Democratic Party. Things were not always easy, but I do think I want to note the fact that what is it like for you as a Muslim to see Rashida Tlaib likely to become the first female Muslim congresswoman and on the Democratic ticket? You've got three women statewide: Gretchen Whitmer, Jocelyn Benson, Dana Nessel, not to mention the U.S. Senate incumbent. Does the Democratic Party, though, have trouble with inclusivity?
I'm really proud of Rashida and what she was able to pull off. You know, I think it says a lot about our state and our country that a shamelessly Palestinian American, Muslim American woman is going to be representing our 13th district, and that's awesome. I think, you know, Senator Whitmer ran an admirable race, and, you know, and a lot of, I think what drove turnout was, you know, what they're calling a pink wave, which I just think is not a good word for it, but women coming out and taking hold of our politics and demonstrating, the value of female leadership. I just think the pink wave idea is just, it doesn't serve, to tell how serious I think so many people are about both running and voting to make sure that our representation is fairer and more inclusive. I will say this, though. There are pretty deep inclusivity challenges that we face. I mean, our ticket at this point doesn't have any people of color on it. And the idea that there are more people of color on the Republican ticket than there are on the Democratic ticket should be a point of consideration and, frankly, a point of fear because what we did, I think, so well was reach into communities that traditionally had given up on Democratic politics because they didn't feel like they had anything to vote for. And we win when those people are enthused and excited to come out. And we need that in our politics. And I also know that, you know, the nature of institutions is that sometimes the folks who make decisions at the top aren't always forced to pay attention to the people for whom they're making decisions at the bottom. And
did you get the support you needed from the top?
Look, I have my issues with the assumption about the idea that because I was Muslim or because I was Arab American that there's no way I could win votes outstate. And we just proved that to be untrue. And I know that the work we were doing, we kicked off our campaign with a listening tour not too far away from when you played that tape 534 days ago. And we know that our message was resonating with folks out there. But I think, you know, I think there are institutional biases in any institution, and the work of addressing them is abiding. It doesn't happen in one candidacy. It doesn't happen in one election. It happens because people decide to continue to do this work and to continue to push the envelope. And wins like Rashida's and the fact that that there are a record number of women running for office, I think those are big wins. And we just got to keep going.
I think one of the things that I think is fascinating, right, for any statewide candidate is just how much you travel and how much of the state that you see. You've probably seen more of Michigan than my guess is. I don't know. I'm making 90% of folks who live in Michigan. Tell me something about Michigan that I don't know. What should we know about Michigan as a statewide candidate?
I'll just say there's more that unites us than separates us. I mean, a lot of our politicians have made a lot of success telling us that the challenges that people face in Detroit are not the same as the challenges people face in Kalkaska. And having visited both of those cities and an additional 123 cities, I know that the challenges that poor or working or retired people face are fundamentally the same.
And yet why isn't there that? Why don't?
Because so few people actually get the opportunity to talk to each other. And the assumption that we'd have nothing to share drives that, right? So many times I'd be speaking with folks in Metro Detroit where I grew up and they'd say, well, you've driven out there. What's it like? What are they like? I'm like, well, you know, frankly, they're just like you. And they're talking about the same issues. And the other thing about Michiganders, and, you know, it's maybe this might be a cliche, but we're good people. Like Michiganders are just really good people. They like care to ask how you're doing and they actually mean it. And I found, you know, campaigning as a 33-year-old Arab Muslim American that the hospitality, the generosity, the courtesy, the smiles that I got were just as warm in Southeast Michigan as they were in Northern Michigan or Western Michigan, even if people didn't agree with me. I remember having a conversation with a gentleman. He said, you know, I've heard about you. I don't think you and I agree on much, but you seem like a really nice guy. And I want to tell you, I wish you luck, person to person.
And let's share a pasty together.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. And so that ability, I think, to transcend our differences in geography or in demography is going to be the future of our state. And we've got to figure out how to make sure that we're sharing a coherent conversation about our collective Michigan.
And yet that's not what wins campaigns, right? Instead, it's the attack ads. Instead, it's, you know, dark money. I think most folks wish that there was this sort of utopian society in which you're talking about, and that is the reason why that they keep voting the bums out and don't trust the swamp, right? And yet it comes to election time, everyone sets their watches, and there go the negative ads, there goes the dark money claims. I know not one person can wave a magic wand and fix that. But now that you've been in it and been in the middle of the tornado, the eye of this storm, what are some things that candidates could do to change the tone? Because let's be honest, you were part of some of this, right? And it kind of encompasses everyone, whether you go in wanting to be positive or not.
What I'll tell you is that I'm really proud that our campaign never ran any attack ads. And I'm proud that our campaign never took any dark money and never took any corporate money. We wanted to live on our ideals. And yeah, you know, that meant sometimes articulating very clear differences in both policy and kind of the brand of politics that we ran from others. But I will say that that there's really two ways that campaigns can decide they want to move. They either can fearmonger or they can articulate what is beautiful. And what we always wanted to do was to talk about what's beautiful in the world that we want to build. And and also to articulate why certain ways of doing politics and certain positions weren't going to get us there, but always to focus on what was beautiful and on what unites. And I hope that we succeeded in doing that. I'll also say that one of the most corrupting things about our politics is the money, is the way that big money drives a certain impersonal approach to politics. 60% of the average campaign, and let's just say my campaign raised $5 million and we got outspent tremendously on $5 million. We spent about $2 million on TV, and all of our ads were positive, just talking about me or the work that I did or what we wanted to do. But so much of the money just drives the sort of impersonal kind and impersonal brand of politics that takes us away from the individual one-on-one conversations that are so much more nuanced and so much more thoughtful than, a 30-second ad. And yet, the more money there is in politics, the more it drives the TV-based advertising, and the less personal our politics become. And so we've all got to figure out not just how to take certain kinds of money out of our politics, because that money comes with some asks on the back end, but also how do we just bring down the price tag? How do we make our politics more about talking to people and having a conversation rather than talking at people with talking points and 30-second ad spots? I think that has to be something we focus on, because in the eye of the storm, the moments that are the most inspiring are the moments where you talk to somebody, you look them in the eye, and you have a conversation about, to me, what are the two questions that are the substrate of our democracy? Who are we and who do we want to be? And those conversations are so much more uplifting and so much more nuanced and so much more thoughtful than anything anybody will put on TV for 30 seconds. And the more we can be centering that in our politics, the better our politics become and the better they reflect that nuance and that thought in who we ought to be.
I'm Zoe Clark, and we are talking with Abdul El-Sayed, candidate for governor. Earlier, you mentioned your age, so I'm going to remind folks you are 33. You work out, you eat well, right? You've got a long life ahead of you. So let's say that's one third of your life. What's the next two thirds looking like? What's next for you?
I went to medical school because I wanted to learn how to heal people. I grew up in a diverse house where I was raised by my father, who's an immigrant from Egypt, who was the son of an eighth grade educated vegetable salesman, and my grandmother, who was so wise and so smart but never got to go to school. And then my mother was a daughter of the revolution. And I grew up in this house where I had this experience of, going back and forth between here and Egypt, and back and forth between where I grew up in Oakland County and Detroit. And I wanted to become a doctor because I wanted to be able to do something about the differences in access to a healthy life. I ultimately, went to medical school and realized that public health was where I wanted to be, because our politics and our society is what dictates and patterns access to a healthy life in the first place. And then when I came to appreciate that so much of what we can do in public health is dictated by our politics, that's when I decided to run for office. For me, the path has always been the same. It's about trying to find true north, about how we service ideals, about how we build justice and equity and sustainability into our world. I'm not going to get to fulfill that as governor, but the path hasn't changed. I'll just walk it in a different way, and so I don't know what's next.
Will you be campaigning for the nominee, Gretchen Whitmer?
Certainly. She and I have yet to sit down. I want to be as beneficial to her ticket as possible, and I look forward to having that conversation about how I can benefit. I do hope that a lot of what our campaign showed are things that she can assimilate into her message and into her campaign, because, we showed what's possible when you reach out to communities of color and progressives and young people. And I look forward to hopefully helping to do that for her as well. Look, you know, if you sort of think about a warrior, every warrior in your mind's eye has a sword and a shield. And we aimed to be the sword for progressive politics, to drive forward a conversation about healthcare and a living standard of water and renewable energy. But we also need a really strong shield. And so, you know, what we cannot have is a Bill Schuette governorship where, you know that this heir of the Dow fortune who literally has made huge amounts of money simply because he was born into wealth with a company that has, you know, has tremendously hurt our environment. We cannot allow this individual to continue to push forward a politics that hurts poor and working people, that hurts our environment, that takes away access to healthcare. And so I am committed to making sure that I do my part to prevent that. And that means putting my shoulder into helping the Whitmer campaign get across the finish line. And I look forward to having a conversation about how I can best do that.
And would that include wanting to be lieutenant governor?
We haven't had that conversation. And look, I want to be as helpful as possible. And, you know, if that means that that I'm asked to join the ticket and, you know, we can talk about how we move forward in a direction that is consistent with our shared values, then that'd be great. And if not, then I'm committed to making sure that that she is governor in January.
So a few minutes ago, we listened to you from 534 days ago. So now do your your looking future 534 days from today. What does that look like for you? What is Abdul El-Sayed, whether you're a lieutenant governor, whether you're a doctor, whether you're at home with your baby girl, what are you going to be doing?
My hope is that I will be working toward infusing justice and equity and sustainability into our world. I do have a baby girl at home, and you know, just a couple of days ago, she woke up and gave me one of those big dumb smiles that an 8-month-old can give you, and I got to smile back, and I didn't have to go anywhere, and that was lovely. I think the work sustains, the pathway is the same. You know, my commitment to these values and into infusing them into our politics, into our government, that doesn't change at all. And you know, we'll see what happens next. I've come to appreciate that. The world is a very complex place, and it's very difficult to fundamentally forecast what's coming next. But I think if you hook yourself to a set of values to say, this is what I want to serve in the world, and this is how I want to serve people, that you'll never go wrong.
Well, she'll be 2.5, so you guys can have conversations about Medicaid for All and
Medicare
for All
and all things. I mean, like that. I'm confident that she's going to have very explicit opinions about healthcare policy.
Abdul El-Sayed ran for governor as a Democrat in Michigan, lost to Gretchen Whitmer, who will be the nominee, who will run against Attorney General Bill Schuette. Abdul El-Sayed, we'll watch and see what comes over the next few weeks through the campaign and 534 days from now.
Well, Zoe, thank you so much for the time. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have toured Michigan, learned from Michiganders, met so many incredible people, and hope I can reflect the goodness that I was shared into the work that we do 534 days from now.